Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Mini Break, your daily podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Thursday, May 28th. As some of you Cracked Rackets fans may know, we are so excited to continue our partnership with our friends at AeroBar because they're producing a product that we can really believe in. It is the only tennis-specific energy bar available on the market. Most importantly, it's made with the healthiest ingredients to ensure that you can maximize your performance on the tennis court. And yes, we obviously believe in the AeroBar product, but it's the organizational philosophies of AeroBar that attracted us to them so much here at Cracked Rackets. It's the fact that they are truly doing all they can for tennis players across the globe to offer you that nutritious option that's going to provide you with the sort of energy and the sort of nutrients you need to play your best tennis on the court. And if you listen to last Thursday's episode with our friends from AeroBar, co-founders Mark Arrowsmith, Andrew Golub, you'll know that we are so excited to take our partnership with them to the next level and announce that we will be doing a weekly show with them here on these Thursday mini breaks called Getting to the Point, where we're going to focus on some of the lesser heralded things that make a professional tennis player the sort of talent and well-refined pro that they are. It's things such as, you know, because when you hit the professional tennis level, I suppose a little bit of background first, you know, all of these players can, you know, smack the cover off of forehands. Their backhands look immaculate. They're great at closing the net. Their serves world class. But it's really the little things that distinguish, you know, the best players from the rest. It's the fact of, you know, what they're doing with their nutrition to give them that extra 10% edge, or what they're doing behind the scenes fitness wise. Really the training they're putting in, you know, away from the limelight, off the biggest stages, you know, not, you know, the training they're also doing off the court. Things such as stretching and recovery post matches, all of those little details that, you know, we casual fans may not, we don't get to see as frequently, and so we may not be as well versed in those details. Those are going to be the sort of subjects we talk about on these Getting to the Point episodes. And folks, let me just say, for our first episode, there is no person who maximized their talent more due to the work they did off the court, the fitness they were doing, ensuring that the nutrition they were putting into their body was of the highest quality to maximize the most of their talent, get the most out of their tennis career. And our first guest today joining us on Getting to the Point is Michael Russell, a fellow Michigander, I should say. And my coaches used to always butter me up, you know, Alex, you're the hardest worker we've ever seen. Alex, you're the most talented Jewish tennis player to come out of Southeast Michigan since Aaron Krickstein. Well, after, you know, interviewing Michael Russell and after hearing about his story, his upbringing, and even going back and talking to my coaches to ask them what young Michael was like, they were very clear that they were just buttering me up, that there has never been a harder worker than Michael Russell. And I think all of us who recall his career, I mean, look, Michael Russell was 5'8", you know, 160, 170 pounds, soaking wet. You know, on his best days, he was always going to come into a match with a physical disadvantage. And so he talked about what he had to do off the court to ensure that he was maximizing his physical capabilities at all times. You know, things such as push-ups, sit-ups, and, you know, more importantly than anything, the nutrition he was putting into his body. He talks about, you know, when he realized how early in his career that it was the little things such as the fitness and nutrition that was going to put him over the top, give him, you know, some sort of advantage over his fellow competitors, over his peers. And so we explore what that looks like, what, you know, proper nutrition actually is, what a proper fitness regimen actually looks like. Now, of course, we have a bunch of fun in this podcast because if you listeners don't know, Michael Russell, the NCAA College Freshman of the Year during the 96-97 season at the University of Miami, That was also the first season for Mark Arrowsmith, co-founder of Aerobar. And, of course, Mark has a little fun on the pod at Michael's expense, teases him a little bit. We talk about, of course, Michael's foray into coaching now and the sort of advice he gives to his top players. And, you know, for him, he's coaching Mackie McDonald, Tennis Sandgren. So I had to ask him at the end because of all the, you know, you hear so many folk stories about Michael Russell, the fitness freak, Michael Russell, what he's capable of. So I had to ask right now, they're doing drills, Tennis Sandgren, Mackie McDonald, Michael Russell in the gym. Who's winning those drills? And I promise you will all enjoy his answers because it's the sort of answer you would expect from someone as disciplined, as dedicated as Michael Russell. So it's a spectacular podcast that I know all of you listeners will thoroughly enjoy. And again, for you listeners interested in Aerobar, before we even get into the show, I will remind you, you can learn all about Aerobars. You can order up yourself in a case by going to aerobar.com. And once you get there, you know, you're going to fall in love with the product, I promise, especially once you taste your first Aerobar. They truly are delicious, and so once you buy one, you'll get hooked. And, you know, as an incentive, save a little money in your pocket. Our friends at Aerobar have offered us the promo code CRACKED15 so that you can get 15% off your order. You know, also let them know that we sent you there. And, you know, folks, again, two flavors right now, chocolate chip Aerobar, cinnamon honey oat. And, you know, I'm never going to complain about a chocolate chip anything because I enjoy chocolate in all of its forms, but I will tell you this, that cinnamon honey oat Aerobar is freaking delicious. It is going to blow the competition out of the water. I'm not even going to name those other energy bars, but I promise you're going to eat one Aerobar. You're never going to want to go anywhere else. So go to aerobar.com, use that promo code CRACKED15, get yourself a case, and tell our friends at Aerobar that we here at Cracked Racket sent you there. I also have to briefly say before we get into this podcast, because, you know, the mini break is a day in, day out product, and, you know, it takes a lot of hard work behind the scenes to make it possible. Of course, none of it would be possible without the support we also get from our friends at Midwest Sports. And that's because for more than 20 years, Midwest Sports has served as one of the world's premier tennis equipment suppliers. That's why we're so happy to be partnered with them. But we also know that they offer a comprehensive selection of fast shipping tennis supplies that few retailers can match and have one of the largest in-stock inventories of tennis equipment online with tens of thousands of products available for shipping from their automated warehouse directly to your front door. They value innovation and have personally tailored their products to highlight your skills on the court. And perhaps you don't know what you need. Well, I can tell you, their well-trained staff are intimately familiar with tennis equipment and can help you find that perfect racket, perfect shoe, or perfect pair of tennis clothing that is sure to put you ahead of the competition. Their selections of equipment are consistently first to market, and they pride themselves in stocking their tennis warehouse with the newest products at the lowest prices. You can find all of these products now at their website, MidwestSports.com, and I promise you're going to get on there, you're going to like what you see, you're going to want to order yourself up some stuff, particularly as all of us start preparing to head back to the tennis court once again. And, you know, to make things a little bit easier for you, to ensure you have all you need when you make that return, our friends at Midwest Sports, if you use our promo code CR15, you're going to get an additional 15% off your order. You're going to get free two-day shipping on all orders exceeding $75. But the piece de resistance to this offer, mwah, a free can of Wilson Extra Duty tennis balls with the use of that promo code CR15. So go to MidwestSports.com, use the promo code CR15, get 15% off your orders. Our friends at Midwest Sports, so kind to continue to support us here at Cracked Rackets. The least we can do is ask you to support them as well. So go to MidwestSports.com, use that promo code CR15. All right, with that said, without further ado, let's get to the conversation we have on our first episode of Getting to the Point, powered by Aerobar. Our conversation with Aerobar ambassador, former ATP Top 60 singles player, Michael Russell, right after this.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Joining us on the podcast tonight is a player all of us are well familiar with. He reached a career high of number 60 in the ATP singles rankings in August of 27. Of course, his career spanned across three different decades. And I can say this proudly, a fellow former Detroit Country Day student, Michael Russell, welcome to the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, it is our pleasure to have you here, and I have to say, I used to always think I was the pride of the Sports Club of West Bloomfield, and then I called my coaches and I said, hey guys, you have any Michael Russell stories? And they said, boy, do we ever. And so, you know, just to start off today's podcast before we get into, you know, talking with Andrew and Mark and what you are up to now, for our listeners, how did you get involved in the game of tennis? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe your father, George, owned Square Lake?
Exactly. So I come from a tennis family. My father has been in the tennis business his whole life and owned Square Lake Racquet Club. He built Farmington Hills Racquet Club back in the 70s. So I was fortunate enough to be brought up in a tennis family. My brother played collegiately at Princeton. And so I was born into it. And luckily, I love the sport, gravitated to it, and it is part of my life now.
Yeah, I have heard multiple stories that I do want to ask you about, but let's start here. You know, we're on the podcast. There are two Detroit Country Day State High School champions on the phone. Only one of us won his state finals match 6-0, 6-0 at the two singles position. That was you. Be honest. Did you let David play the one singles position that year?
Well, let's just say that it made it easier in the household when we came home at night. So not to say that I could beat him at that time, but it definitely alleviated any family crises.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard, you know, for you, you talk about growing up in a tennis family. You obviously were a top-ranked junior throughout your career. You know, was pro tennis something you always had aspirations to do? And, you know, did you train as such even when you were 14, 15, 16 years old?
Didn't really want to be a pro until I was about 16. I just loved playing tennis. I mean, I love that one-on-one aspect of it. I know we always hear it, a little the cliche, the gladiator, you know, sport, because there are very few sports that are one-on-one. And so, you know, I shouldn't say I couldn't blame anybody, because we all like to blame everyone when we're playing. But it was one of those things where it was just me out there. So I was responsible for the winning, the losing, the problem solving. And at that time, when I wanted to be a pro at 16 is when I also dedicated myself more to the fitness, the nutrition, and I know we're going to start getting into that as we go along here, but that was really the turning point in my whole tennis career at that young age.
Mm-hmm. I have heard back in the day, and you know, firsthand testimony, I'll out my source. This is from Armand and Ed. They say you are always the first to the court. You're sprinting. You're bouncing when the group's being brought in. You're doing push-ups as you're waiting for drills to start. You know, A, they say Arvid Swan always beat you in those push-up competitions. Is that true or false? And B, you know, was that just the attitude you felt you needed to have to get where you wanted to go?
Yeah, so it was. I'll answer that in a multi-step process. So, A, I am borderline psychotic, OCD. I love doing fitness. I still work out sometimes twice a day. And so it's become a part of my daily routine. And I knew that I wasn't going to be 6'3" and just serving guys off the court. So fitness was going to be a big part of my career in order to be successful, you know, even at that stage in the junior circuit. B, Arvid was beating me in those competitions, but there is an asterisk because Arvid was, I think, he's 3 or 4 years older than me, so I can't give him full credit. But yeah, he did beat me in most of those like sprints, push-up competitions at Sports Club in Square Lake.
No, that's good to hear. I suppose there was some truth to it. And, you know, I know you eventually moved down to Florida to take tennis more seriously, train full time. You ultimately stay down there to do a year of college tennis in Miami. And I suppose that's where, you know, Mark and Andrew come into the equation. But for you, you know, what was it about moving to Florida that, well, you know, why was that a significant step you felt you needed to take at that time? And then, you know, ultimately, why did you think a year of college tennis would be beneficial for your development?
At the time when I was transitioning from 16 to 17 years old. I just finished being ranked number one in the nation. I won Kalamazoo that year in singles and doubles. And I couldn't find enough competition in Southeast Michigan at that time. I mean, I did play sets with Ed and Armin and Brian Vallette, some of those guys, which was fantastic. But I had the opportunity to go down to Saddlebrook. And during that time when I was at Saddlebrook, my senior year in high school, Pete Sampras was training there. I hit some with some of the female players as well, like Jennifer Capriati, and then Shuzo Matsuoka, Jim Courier. So at 16 and 17, to be able to train with the number one player in the world, I mean, it was invaluable. Like, I could really see how my game could develop. And then combine that with, you know, playing 4 or 5 hours a day in the heat. And I needed that step to see if I was ready to turn pro and continue those aspirations.
Mike, I got to be honest with you. I think actually one of your greatest accomplishments is going to a year of college with Mark and becoming a pro after that. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah. A lot of temptations from Mr. Aerosmith. Sometimes I did succumb to them, but then I was good. And then the next day I always made sure I actually did my fitness.
And that's probably why you only stayed for 1 year.
That's why people are put here, you know, is to test other people and make them better. You know, a thank you card would be nice.
So it was good, yeah. So then I felt like I wasn't ready to turn pro after finishing high school, even though I was number one in the nation. I felt like I needed to mature physically, mentally, and being at Miami for at least 1 or 2 years. The coach at the time at Miami was also my coach in juniors, and he knew Rodney Harmon. He knew that I didn't want to go to college all 4 years. I wanted to be a pro. And the fact that coming into Miami, playing number one singles, and I played, I think, 75 matches in one season, which, you know, I was never able to get that many matches in the junior circuit in 1 year. So it's just a whole lot of positives.
Sounds great. Yeah, I'm going to kind of take over from here with just some questions. We've covered a little bit of it already, which is great. One of the things I wanted to ask about, you touched on a little bit of, you know, turning 16 and really focusing on wanting to become a pro. You know, I've heard stories, some of them I don't even know if they're true or not, like about all the ridiculous sit-ups and push-ups. Like, what was the fitness that you were doing when you were 15, 16, 17, and kind of what was the motivation behind it?
I can't divulge my secrets there. No. No, so it really was. It was kind of a pivotal point where I played a match at Kalamazoo against a good friend of mine, one of the Bryan brothers, and I lost in 3 sets, and I was exhausted like midway through the match. And I was already a good player, but my fitness level wasn't where it should have been. And I felt so bad after the match that I personally felt like the only reason I lost was because my fitness let me down. So I basically made a pledge after that match that I didn't want to lose another match because of fitness. So it was literally like a light switch just turned on. And from that day on, and I don't know why, it goes back to the OCD, borderline psychotic, I started doing 1,000 sit-ups, crunches a day. Now, most people, it's like, you want to get fitter. It's not like the first thing to come to mind doesn't really say, okay, I'm doing 1,000 sit-ups a day. You think, okay, I'm going to start doing some sprints and jump rope, which I did, but somehow I thought doing 1,000 sit-ups every day was one of the keys. So I did. I started doing 1,000 every day. And obviously the first month was miserable. And then after that, I got used to it. And I think it just, obviously my core was super strong, but I think psychologically it really helped me doing all that core work. And then I started doing a bunch of fitness as well. And to tie in your question, I also started really focusing more on my nutrition, trying to eat cleaner, good complex carbohydrates, clean proteins, you know, no fast foods, and just making sure that whatever I put in my body was efficient, and I was using that caloric intake for the best energy expenditure.
Nice. Yeah, no, I just, like I said, I'd heard the stories and I knew, I mean, it sounds like a lot. I do about 1,000 crunches a month, which is solid, but it's
that's fine. I didn't even know you're still doing crunches. That's pretty solid.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'm just starting to scratch the surface. Kind of moving on. One thing that I like to ask, you know, everybody that we talk to that's had the ability and the privilege kind of to play top level junior tennis, college tennis. I mean, I think you were the freshman of the year, right? In NCAAs.
I was, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then obviously an extremely long career on tour. Like, how do you feel, you know, what stages did your nutrition and fitness go in from juniors to college to professional tennis and even the different phases of your pro tennis?
Yeah, no, it's a good question because obviously it evolves throughout the years, and a lot of it is through experiences and knowing your body, what things work and what not. Midway through, I want to say like the end of my junior career, beginning of my pro career, I found out that I was lactose intolerant. So that made a big difference in my diet. So I had to eliminate a lot of the dairy products. And if I was going to go dairy, obviously the lactose-free choices. And really focusing on making sure that, you know, I had enough time to digest before working out. The foods that I were eating, a lot of fruits, a lot of vegetables, no processed foods. You know, I think doing all those combined with all the work in the gym, and that's also another, I mean, I know your question, there's a lot of answers to it. So the work in the gym, I realized that given my genetic upbringing, it's more important for me to be explosive and not lift as heavy, because I want to be able to play, you know, 2-3 hours on court, or if I'm playing 3 to 5, you know, later on in my pro career, I need to play maybe up to 5 hours. I need to make sure that I'm not too bulky, given my stature. So I really focused on being explosive and making sure I did a lot of the HIT training, high intensity training, to make sure that I could withstand all the traveling rigors that travel on tour. Very difficult to be playing in different countries and on the airplanes, and you know, it really takes a toll on your immune system. So it's a whole periodization template that we look at in the beginning of the year to make sure that we're maximizing our bodies and our games when we're going into the tournaments, and that evolves depending on how many tournaments you're going to play each month.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And to follow up on that, you sort of get into the balance you need to have. And, you know, late into your career, as late as 2009, 10, 11, 12, you're still playing 70-plus matches on tour. And so to the sort of flip side of this, is there any fear for you of burning out? Obviously, you are a guy who likes to stay in shape, but how do you balance making sure, you know, you're peaking when you're playing tournaments and you're not coming into events, you know, overexerted on your energy because you're training too hard?
Yeah. And that's always finding the right balance. I have to do it now with the players that I coach, Tennis Sangren and Mackenzie McDonald, making sure that they don't overtrain coming into the tournament. So when I was playing, especially as you alluded to later on in my career, I spent more time on recovery and less time on court. So being in the gym allowed me to get stronger physically, which helped me mentally, but then also really spend a lot of time on recovery, which included, you know, stretching, massaging, foam rolling, icing, ice baths, contrast baths, which is, you know, hot and cold, 2 minutes in the hot, 2 minutes in the cold, off and on. A lot of times, if I did have a little bit of an injury, using a little more holistic modalities like acupuncture, dry needling, Rolfing. So just always looking for ways to make sure that I was 100% physically, which would allow me to to play, you know, and especially the way that I played, which was so physical on court. So I needed to make sure that my body was ready to go. And then that helped me mentally not be burned out.
Yeah, no, like one of the things you just touched on there, Mike, like I always thought it was amazing and sometimes annoying when we were like getting ready to go eat or I was waiting on you, but that you would spend an hour or more when we were traveling together on the stretching, the icing, the foam roller. Like that's an area I think most players neglect. What do you think are the most neglected areas in the junior? You work with some juniors still. I know you work with, you know, Tennis and Mackey, like not to get personal on them, but just in general, the guys on tour, like what do you think people are neglecting or the juniors?
Yeah, I mean, I think the pro players do a good job of taking care of what needs to be taken care of. And I think that's a big part of it. It's what I do now. Like when I'm not coaching on tour, I coach high performance juniors and some adults in Houston at the Houston Racquet Club. And that's part of our conversations is really take care of the things off the court that you have accountability and responsibility for, because there's so many variables when you're playing tennis that if you can take care of the things that you can control off the court, it allows you to have much more confidence and much more belief while you're playing. So that's everything from nutrition to, like I alluded to before, you know, rolling, stretching, icing. So I think the pros do a good job because they have access to it as well. You know, there's a lot of physios at each tournament. They can, you know, do soft tissue and massage. They can stretch you. Once in a while, I still have to remind them. But, you know, the juniors really have to make sure that they incorporate that into their daily regimen, because it's just as important as all their work on court, all their fitness, and all their time, you know, off court when they're just relaxing and eating or doing schoolwork. That they have to factor that into part of their daily routines.
And Mike, in relation to what you're talking about there, you know, to all, any and all junior players or parents that are listening to this, where can their kid get an edge in all this amongst their peers? You know, obviously you played as high level junior tennis as you could play, and you're around those peers as well. Where can they get an edge on their opponents?
Well, I mean, it goes back to the fitness and the nutrition. So, you know, they can get an edge. Obviously, they're going to spend a lot of hours on court trying to hone certain skills and finding the right coach. But having the nutrition and the fitness where you can control that, you can walk on court knowing that you're fitter than your opponent already, or you have a better diet, which gives you that little bit of 1% confidence. Because as you progress up the rankings and your level increases, having that 1% difference is the difference of, you know, winning a match 6-4, 6-4, as opposed to losing 6-4, 6-4, because differences in matches can just be 1 or 2 points, and that can come down to the fitness, to the nutrition.
Yeah, totally agree. I think it's underutilized, obviously, in junior tennis, a lot of that stuff.
Yeah,
that's, you know, I was going to ask you, you know, it's a good follow-up to that question. You know, as a AeroBar ambassador, which has been a great relationship, why did you get involved in AeroBar? I mean, I know you're huge on the nutrition and fitness, obviously, and kind of, you know, what nutrients, you know, you helped out early on in the process, throughout, what were the nutrients and what did you really want in the bar?
Well, it also answers Andrew's question a little bit too of how do you get that advantage? And I think having the nutritional advantage even while you're playing, because we've seen it so many times, it's happened to me where, you know, you're feeling great, you're moving well, your energy levels are perfect, and you know, it's easy to play your best tennis when you feel great, but then all of a sudden, you know, midway through a match or deep in a match, you're burning calories and your level drops just a little bit, and that drop in level, you know, you can lose the match because you're losing a couple points, you don't have the same focus, you don't have the same energy. And that's one of the things that, you know, I loved about AeroBar. Obviously, we're all great friends. We came from University of Miami, but when you guys came to me with that idea, And I loved her idea. And I said, well, yeah, that big part of my game is fitness and nutrition. So I'd love to be a part of it as well, because it is. I mean, AeroBar, it's all natural for one. So that's, you know, especially nowadays, we have to make sure that what we're putting in our bodies, we can absorb it. We can use all the nutrients. It's gluten-free, so it's easy to digest, which is imperative, because when you're running side to side, it's 100 degrees outside. You don't want to have that bloat, that indigestion from, you know, a lot of the competing, I should say, energy bars and a lot of even just foods in general. You know, you see some of the players on court reach, you know, certain foods, and you kind of question, why are they eating those? Where AeroBar has, it's gluten-free, it's all natural, organic ingredients, and then it has a lot of electrolytes, which need to be replaced when we're exerting ourselves, like potassium, sodium, so those, and even some magnesium. So it's just having those ingredients, having an energy bar that can give you sustained energy. It tastes phenomenal, which I was surprised that you can make a bar that is that efficient and that good for your energy systems that can still taste great. So I've been a big fan, big proponent of it ever since we created it. And, you know, it's just, I think it should be a part of every tennis player's racket bag. You know, they should always have it in there, because not only do they need it during fitness and during some intense practice sessions, but they should always have it when they're playing matches, because they don't know when they're going to have to go into the bag and get something and make sure that they sustain those energy levels and keep that high intensity.
Yeah, and can I just say, you know, speaking for you, Andrew, Mark, myself, I agree. We are all friends. We all know each other very well. So, I appreciate it, you saying that, Michael. We are. We definitely all knew each other back in the day in Miami. Yeah. That's, I feel included when you say something like that.
Yeah.
No, and I was going to go with one more, kind of one of the things that I heard some stories of, and I think some of these guys might not know. I know everyone asked you about your match with Guga at the French, but you were down, I did not look it up, you were down match points first on main or first on qualies that year?
Yeah, so it was in 2001, and it was actually the fourth Grand Slam that I had to qualify for in succession. So it was my third year on tour, and first round qualifying, I was down match point, 6-4, 5-4, at out serving, and my opponent actually had a volley at net and could have probably just bunted in the corner and won the point, but tried to be really flashy, end up missing a drop volley. I come back, win the match, I qualify, and then four rounds later into the main draw, I'm playing Gustavo Querten, who's a two-time French Open champion, on Philippe Chatrier, center court of French Open, and I have match point in the third set, up two sets to love. We have a 22-ball rally, hits a ball off the back of the line, ends up winning the point. I lose the match in five sets, and he goes on to win his third French Open. So it was pretty wild 2.5 weeks, but incredible experience.
And you set, you played this again. This one might be made up. At least I've told the story correctly about the first round, you know, qualies, match point down. You played Bruguera second or third round, and he had won the French Open already, and you cramped him up, right?
Yeah, so I played Sergei Bruguera second round, and first two sets were 2 hours and 55 minutes. And then in the third set, I got up a break in the third set. It was also about 40 degrees Celsius, which in Fahrenheit is like close to 100 degrees, which is unheard of in Paris. And literally, I remember looking over and his face was beet red, and he just started walking to the net. I was like, no way. And so he ended up retiring. I mean, it was the longest three sets I've ever played. I think it was 3 hours and like 25 minutes. And we were only halfway through the third set, and he ended up shaking my hands, retiring.
And you went into the training room when he was in there and jumped on the exercise bike, right? To show him that you weren't tired at all.
Probably. That's probably something I would have done. Yeah. I mean, I was always jumping on the bike. I still do it after a tough workout, after a match. Yeah. But I was always a little bit of the psychological advantage, kind of like in your face. Yeah. That I could continue to play a few more hours if necessary.
Yeah. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just, you know, to follow up, because again, you have played, you know, various continents, various countries, various levels of tennis throughout the globe. How difficult is it to stay disciplined and find nutritious options? Say you're in, you know, Uzbekistan for a challenger, or you just have a streak of, you know, European challengers and you're there for a couple of months. How difficult is it to stay disciplined and find options that are reasonable when you're on the road?
It's difficult. I mean, especially when you're starting out and you're playing in some events that are in smaller cities, and it makes it a challenge. I mean, you either have to travel with certain products, you know, they can make it easier. Usually that's more of a complement to meals, such as like protein shakes or bars, which obviously AeroBar would be a great choice to have with you, just as a nutritious snack to have in between meals. But yeah, it's a constant battle. Fortunately, we tried, when I was playing, my wife and I would usually rent like an Airbnb, and she's a phenomenal chef, so she would cook a lot of the meals. So we really had that under control, but it's a constant struggle. I mean, you have to make sure that, you know, you're getting the right foods. Nowadays there are more options, especially in the bigger cities that you go to. You can find a lot of local markets, and a lot of grocery stores carry a lot of different type of products that can satisfy if you have certain allergies or whatnot. But yeah, you got to do your due diligence before traveling and make sure that you're prepared.
Mike, let me ask you a question. You know, I know you and your wife have traveled the world together. How important has she been to your success and your career? Because I mean, I obviously see you, you know, on Instagram and everything. You guys do everything together, cooking and all kinds of stuff. How important has she been to your fitness, nutrition, everything?
Yeah, no, she's been the main rock. You know, she's had so many different roles, from chef to support to she's had to run rackets to get strung during matches. Obviously she's in the stands always cheering and rooting me on. So it's, and also, you know, traveling on tour, it can be extremely lonely. So to be able to travel with my wife and have not only my best friend, but my, you know, my support team, she kind of all encompasses that. It was invaluable. I mean, she helped me get through a lot of matches, and again, you know, being prepared to travel to all these tournaments, you know, she really helped with all the organization and everything.
And wasn't it her birthday yesterday? Today?
It was. It was her birthday yesterday. So we, obviously, right now it's can't celebrate with everybody in person, but we had some calls with some family members, a little Zoom birthday party, and she had a lot of messages and a lot of love, so it's which she was really happy about. We had a little mini at-home celebration.
We all wish her the quarantine happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Was that a cheat day for you? Is that a day where you'll indulge a little bit in some birthday cake?
Oh yes, yeah. I made a chocolate fudgy brownie yesterday. Mm. So yeah. You definitely will not see me usually eat that, but I made it yesterday. It was
now. If I recall, Mike, you when you won matches or whatever, you had one of those little Ferrero Rocher things. Isn't that what you did for a while?
I did that for a while. Yeah, it was kind of the incentive I had. If I won, I had one Ferrero Rocher. But I don't know. It's kind of funny that's the motivation to win a professional tennis match, to get one Ferrero Rocher. But hey, whatever works.
When I was coaching Mike and he would win matches, I would have 7 Jack and Cokes. It was great.
Yeah, it's probably not the ideal liquid to have as a travel companion.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're eating AeroBars on the side, you're fine.
Yeah, no, it all works out.
Yeah, you can balance it out.
That's how it's been. Yeah, so with someone who is, you know, rigorous about your fitness and, you know, disciplined as you, Michael, I got to ask, how do you end up – I know you said your coach is there, but Miami is the antithesis of disciplined and the antithesis – you know, you're there to have a good time. Case in point, Mark Arrowsmith, you know, nice to meet you. But, you know, how for you, what was it about Miami that appealed to you? And I know you are a coach now to obviously high-level pro players, but for – kids making that decision of, you know, they're trying to choose what college to attend. What advice might you give them in making their decision?
Yeah, so for me, the main reasons going to Miami were the fact that Rodney Harmon was there, because I already had that previous coaching relationship with him the year before in juniors. So he knew my game really well, knew that I wanted to be a professional player. And so that it just streamlined right into it. And then also the fact that I would play number one at Miami. So I would be getting a lot of really tough competition. And then the fact that they had a great facility and the weather was phenomenal. You know, South Florida, you're looking at usually sunshine all year round. And I still could get a good education. I mean, they have great academics. And like any school, it's what you make out of it. So I had a great time at Miami, and I think it's important for every junior looking at schools to, you know, make a list and say what your priorities are. You know, are your priorities the who the coach is, how good the players are, where you'll play on the team, the academics, where the school is located, you know, how close to family. I mean, there's a lot of different lists and items that you need to check off and prioritize until you find, you know, that perfect fit.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. And if I want to ask Mark a question about freshman year, Michael. Mark, give me the details, because you know, you were there. Was he the, you know, fitness nut, the hard worker that he obviously, you know, has grown to be, have the reputation of as a freshman, or was there a little bit more of a fun side to young Michael?
Oh, there's both. I mean, I've told people a lot. I mean, I actually, you know, and these guys know. I mean, I coached the number one junior in the country now in 18s, and I spoke to him today about the importance of balance and still having fun. I think Mike had a good amount of fun, not as much fun as I had, well, actually probably more. I played one match my freshman year and lost it, and he won like 50 matches, so he might have had more fun altogether. Mike trained hard. We didn't have the most rigorous fitness at our practices freshman year. Maybe not as rigorous as we maybe thought it was going to be. And Mike was always doing extra, working hard, kind of motivating the other guys on the team as well. I think Mike could tell you we had a very strange mix on that team of a couple upperclassmen who are great guys who didn't really care about their tennis anymore. And then some young guys. I mean, Mike's roommate, I think Yvonne got to the semifinals of NCAAs as a freshman.
Yeah, I mean, Yvonne finished the year like 20 in the nation.
Yeah, I mean, and he got to the semi. I know he beat Paul Goldstein at NCAAs that year. I mean, so we had a mix of guys really wanting to be pros, doing everything to become a pro, and some guys just having a good time, being super talented. Me, I don't know what I was. It was Mike had a great mix, and I think that's why he was successful.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mike, to follow up, you sort of mentioned earlier why you thought college tennis was necessary for your pathway to development. And, you know, again, during the course of your time in the game, the technology changed, courts slowed down, you know, what strings and racket frames allow players to be capable of is very different than it was in the late 90s, early 2000s. And, you know, we see now at the top of the game, it seems like every guy is 6'4 or taller. You look at a guy like a Zverev, a Khachanov, you know, you can go through the list, Medvedev 6'6, on and on and on. And even Tsitsipas is a quiet 6'4. I'm curious how you think the change in technology, you know, changed the way the game of tennis played. Do you think the sport is more physical now than maybe it was in the late 90s, early 2000s?
I think the technology started to change, as you alluded to, in the late 90s, early 2000s. I mean, the rackets were all already graphite, titanium. it was basically the first introduction of the polyester strings. And I think I'm actually the first person in the United States to use Luxilon. I don't know. I have to like find like some stat, because I remember getting a set of it while I was in Europe. Somebody gave it to me to try, and I started using it, and I was like, wow, this is amazing, this polyester string. And then I took it back, and then it seemed like everybody started using that string from then on. But I feel like the main difference in the last 10 years, I would say, is that they really slow down the courts, and the balls are a lot heavier. So it really makes it tough to hit through the court unless you're 6'4" and just absolutely nuking the ball. And that's, you know, the average height, I think now it's close to 6'3" in the top 100. I think it's about 6'2.5". And that's why you see everybody is such a good athlete. And the fact that there is more money in the sport, a lot of the athletes are traveling with teams now. It's not just individual players traveling around in this nomadic lifestyle. It's, you know, they have their own coaches, they have their own physios, some of them even have doctors that are, you know, are traveling with them. So it's a whole business. So it's just, you know, they really, everything is regimented and documented to make sure that, you know, these athletes, these pro tennis players are playing at the maximal level each week.
Mm-hmm. And for you, you know, as a coach now, you know, I'm curious, A, why was coaching something you wanted to pursue after your tennis career? And, you know, be on a more fun note, is it more stressful to be playing, you know, that deep in the third set match, that deep in the fifth set match, or to be the coach of the player who's playing that match that's late in the third or fifth?
Yeah, so in 2015, that was my last year on tour, and I already started coaching a little bit in Houston. I also worked a little bit with Bethany Maddox Sands that year and Donald Young, and I really liked it. I really enjoyed helping other people, and I thought that, you know, the mental side of the game, I was really good at analytically breaking down my opponents, because for most of my time on the pro tour, I didn't have a coach. So I had to do it myself, really come up with strategy and tactics and improve my own game. So I think that gives me a little bit of an advantage when I'm coaching some of the players now, because I do have a good eye for the game and the fact that I enjoy it so much. But as far as coaching on tour, it's a little bit different. I know your question was about what was it different to coaching on tour compared to the juniors.
No. How much is it more stressful to be definitely playing the match or to be coaching
it? I think it's different. You know, you have zero control over the player. You try to put them in the right frame of mind. You try to get them prepared through all the practice, whether that's practice sets and matches, and mentally ready and physically. But at the end of the day, when they're on court, you know, it's up to them. You try to give them support when they're playing, and try to urge them on. And if you can, say some things during the match to get them to analyze better, or try to break down their opponent, then that's phenomenal. But you have zero control. So when you're playing, you have all the controls. So I find it actually more stressful watching and coaching than playing, for sure. I don't know how you guys feel, but
yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah,
when it's totally out of your control, it's so frustrating. And on top of it, when you're a coach and you're telling a player, you know, maybe you go over this whole game plan, this whole strategy, and it just goes out the window when they're on court, and you're just pulling your hair out. So
for sure.
And then I try not to show, I try not to show much emotion on court, you know, when I'm in the box watching, because, you know, I show some positive support, but you don't want to show any negativity. But then sometimes that can be viewed differently from the player, because they want to see a little more emotion. But at the same time, you don't want them to get too high and too low. So that's also a tough dynamic. You want to keep that poker face, but still, you know, inside your emotions are going up and down.
Yeah. I'm 100% the same way. I literally sit there, I have sunglasses on, my hat forward, and I have my hand on my chin, kind of, and I don't move, because I don't want any, like you said, only positive, you know. But I'm dealing with a lot of juniors, so, you know, a lot of the parents are doing enough of the negative on that part. Yes. So I'm kind of just trying to be that neutral figure. It is really difficult to sit there and bite your lip and just give positive emotion when you just, you're like, God, why aren't you just doing what we talked about?
Yep.
No, without question. You know, you've doled out so much advice to our listeners today. And, you know, as an Armin Molino disciple, I'm sure your hourly rate is not free. But I will ask one more question for you on that note, because, you know, all of us right now dealing with various quarantine statuses, at the very least, none of us are going to the gym right now. And I'm sure, you know, throughout your time on tour, you're staying at hotels where maybe there's not a hotel gym or you just don't have access. You know, for you, all you really need is a floor, I suppose, to do push-ups and sit-ups. But for those of our listeners who are getting, you know, restless at home, looking for some workouts they can do to start getting back in shape and getting loose, what would you recommend to them that they do? You know, what are the easy at-home workouts they can do to start getting back into shape?
Yeah, no, definitely. You can be very creative with nothing. So push-ups, sit-ups, planks. You can do squats. If you're looking for weights to hold, you can hold milk cartons, you can hold paint cans, you know, anything that adds a little bit of weight. You can do lunges, you can do shoulder raises with cans, you know, whether that's a can of beans or soup cans. If you're looking for cardio, you can jump rope. If you don't have a jump rope, you can do jumping jacks, you can run in place. And, you know, you can create different stations, you know, where it's 30 seconds. Let's see how many push-ups you can do in 30 seconds. And then after that, you go right into holding a plank for 30 seconds, right into doing as many squats as you can do for 30 seconds. So there's different ways that you can be creative and still get a good workout at home with, you know, very little to no equipment.
Yeah, no, without question. Well, my last thing for you right now, because, again, I know you are as fit as ever. You, Mackie Tennis, are all in the gym. Who's winning the fitness competitions? Because I know you're competing against them.
I don't know if I can answer that question. I think it depends on what we're doing, but I've seen, I mean, both Sengren and Mackie, I mean, they do a lot of fitness, and they have their thresholds are very high, as is mine. So it's tough to put a label on it. But
Alex, one thing that's funny, follow up on that, and this is a couple years ago in Memphis, I believe, I got a picture and a text from Steve Johnson at maybe 6 a.m., and he was super excited that he was getting to the gym that early to work out, and the picture was of Mike finishing his workout. I don't know if Mike would remember that, but I mean, I was obviously not there, but it was truly like real early in the morning, and Stevie all of a sudden got disappointed because Mike had already gotten there and crushed a workout.
I do remember that. It was freezing outside too. I think I did sprints like on the outside hard court too.
Nice.
Yeah. All that answer told me was that the answer is yes. You think you can compete with them just fine.
Yeah.
That's what I learned from that answer.
My own. I'll leave it at that.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. You know, again, it's us Bloomfield Hills kids, we stay in shape, right?
Yeah, I have to.
That's what they know us for. You can't go to the Franklin Cider Mill if you're not in shape, and so we all got to stay in shape. But, you know, with that being said, Michael, again, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. Hope you are staying safe and healthy. And again, on behalf of all of us, please wish your wife a happy birthday.
I will. No, I really appreciate it. It's great chatting with you guys. Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Mark. Thank Andrew. And no, it's been fun.
Hope all of you enjoyed our first episode of Getting to the Point, our brand new weekly episode here on the Mini Break Podcast, sponsored by our friends at AeroBar. A huge thank you to our friend Michael Russell, and as he said on the pod, yeah, me, him, Andrew, Mark, we're all friends. We go back years, but, you know, a huge shout out to Michael for taking the time to chat with us. Always a huge shout out to our friends at AeroBar, Andrew and Mark, and again, to learn more about AeroBar, if you're intrigued in the product, and I don't know how you can't be tennis fans, be sure to go to their website, aerobar.com. Again, you use that promo code CRACKED15. You're going to get 15% off your order. And I'm telling you, folks, it's the only tennis-specific energy bar out there. They truly are delicious. This is not me offering you up some fluff. I promise you're going to take a bite into that first Aero Bar, and you're going to say, what was I doing beforehand? Why was I eating that other junk, putting that nonsense in my body? The products really are that good, folks. I can promise you that. So go to aerobar.com. Order yourself up a box. Use that promo code CRACKED15. Get 15% off. And again, we're so excited to be doing these Getting to the Point episodes each and every week here on the Mini Break Podcast. Our friends at Aerobar promising the guests are only going to get better and better from here. And it's going to be hard to top Michael Russell. You know, from one Detroit Country Day alum to another, we seriously, you know, we know what we're doing. We know how to handle a microphone. We know how to handle a podcast episode. You know, even back in 2006, Country Day was offering Podcasting 101 as a sixth grade elective, so I suppose it's just built into our bones. By the way, folks, that was a joke. Country Day never offered Podcasting 101, but clearly there's something that they do during that educational time that incentivizes being a talker, because it was great to have Michael Russell so eloquent with his answers, and clearly I can talk a little bit as well. Anyways, that was a bit of a tangent. A huge thank you once again to our friends Mark Aerosmith, Andrew Golub at Aerobar for setting this up. And again, the thing you can do as a listener, if you appreciate these episodes, the way you can express your support, go to aerobar.com. Again, one more time, use that promo code CRACKED15 to get 15% off your orders. Anyways, you know, that's not the only thing going on at Cracked Rackets this week. Just a little bit of housekeeping before we go. If you have missed any of our content from the past week, of course, be sure to go to our website, CrackedRackets.com. This interview with Michael Russell, Andrew, and Mark was exceptional, and maybe the most fun interview I did of the week, but tied for one, I would say. The on-video interview I did with our friend B-Dog, Bethany Maddox-Sands, her third appearance on the podcast, we thought we had to change it up somehow, so we'd incorporate a video aspect to it, and of course, super producer Daniel Westhoff putting his spin on that video, which all of you can find on our YouTube channel now. It was great to have B-Dog back on the show because we got to ask her right away about the inaugural Laver Cup-style event happening in Charleston during June. It's going to be 16 women, two teams of eight, players like Bianca Andreescu, Madison Keys, Sloane Stephens, Sophia Kennan. Obviously, B-Dog's going to be a captain in the event, and so many more already committed to play this event. And again, I keep saying this, but even if the ATP, WTA, ITF are currently carrying on as usual, I know I speak for all of us tennis fans when I say, you know, a team style event is something we will always get excited about. And so I ask Bethany about that Charleston event. I ask her about hosting Tennis United, the new ATP WTA YouTube show alongside Avashik Pospisil, what it's like for her to go from interviewee to interviewer, and, you know, so much more fun. Of course, she is, you know, we're never not going to have fun when Bethany Maddox-Sands is on the podcast. So all of you can go check that out in video form or in podcast form as well. I know yesterday on the Great Shot podcast, we hit the 2-hour mark on the pod we released. It was another edition of CR Classics, this time the podcast form of Ben Rothenberg and my conversation about the 2005 Australian Open women's semifinal, where Serena Williams comes back from a set down, ends up knocking off Maria Sharapova to advance to the final. And for those of you not familiar with, you know, WTA history during the aughts, this is a podcast for you, because this match is so significant to really a generation of WTA results. There was a time period when people thought, okay, you know, A, Serena wasn't the champion that she eventually became, but B, people thought maybe Sharapova is going to be the one who runs off 15, 16, 17 plus slam titles. And this match really does encapture a lot about the way that rivalry ended up transpiring over the, you know, larger theme over the course of 10, 15 years during their career. So I think this is it's a CR Classic you all will enjoy. Of course, Ben and I dive into all of the context surrounding that match, the aftermath, and more. We also talk about what we were both up to in 2005, and I will tell you guys, there was a bit of a scandal for me in 2005 that I express or that I talk about during the podcast that I think all of you will enjoy hearing about. So be sure to go check that podcast out as well. And then, of course, be sure to check out our newest podcast, the Inside Out Podcast. We ran the Pete Sampras Andre Agassi episode on Monday's edition of this week's Mini Break, but it's our first narrative-based show, and our first season focuses on the history of American men's tennis practice during the open era. We try and declare who the best American male was during any given season of the ATP Tour since, what, the open era started in 1967, whenever that may be. It's a really fun podcast series. All of you will enjoy season one, and I know all of you fans, particularly you college tennis fans, a little bit of a teaser there, will enjoy season two, which will hopefully be launched sometime soon. So just go like, rate, subscribe, review all of those podcasts, the GSP, the Cracked Interviews, this podcast, the Inside Out podcast as well. And again, be sure to check out our YouTube channel, as so many of these podcasts being turned into incredible videos by our super producer, Daniel Westhoff. And by the way, speaking of super producer Daniel Westhoff, shout out to he and Max Fliegner for the of an editing job they do day in, day out. It's very easy for me to talk into a microphone, much less easy to make that sound coherent, and they do that every day, so shout out to the two of them. Again, if you've missed any of our content, be sure to go to the website crackedrackets.com for the more immediate updates. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, it's at crackedrackets. You want to hop into my DMs personally, feel free to. It's at greatshotpod. A huge thank you once again to our friends at AeroBar. Go to aerobar.com, use the promo code cracked15, get 15% off your order. Another huge shout out to our friends at Midwest Sports. You use that promo code CR15, you'll get 15% off your order when you go to MidwestSports.com. 15 just seems to be the number here, folks, in case you're noticing a theme. But, you know, you save 15% one place, 15% another place. That's 30% in total, and that sounds like a good number to me. A shout out to our super producers, Max Fliegner and Daniel Westhoff. But from the two of them, from our friends at AeroBar, again, Mark Aerosmith, Andrew Golub, thank you to the two of them for taking the time to organize this podcast with our guest, Michael Russell. For the three of them, for our friends at AeroBar and Midwest Sports, and from all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say, folks, that's the break, and we'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.